This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex, a natural solution to chronic pain. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposomes and nanotechnology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. Sourced and manufactured in the United States, this product contains 1,600 milligrams of curcumin and powerful antioxidant properties. This plant-based curcumin is used to possibly reduce inflammation, block proteins that trigger swelling, and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Don't live with pain when there's an all-natural, science-based remedy that works without adverse side effects. Get free shipping on all of your orders at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions can be sent to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. And with me is our nutritionist in residence, Layla Mudin, who is currently, you're on the east end of...
Yes, I am. Yep.
Okay.
I'm on the fork.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there is a bit of a you know, I'm reading a lot of newspaper articles about how a lot of New Yorkers are fleeing New York. I had a conversation with someone who knows a real estate guy out east, and he says that the real estate is really going through the roof. So many people are looking for... They're fleeing the city. They're looking for abodes in places that are less locked down, less oppressive, and ahead of the
curve.
And
not just for the summer either.
Yes,
which is interesting.
Long term,
because a lot of people during this lockdown have realized that they could do a lot more work from home.
Yes,
even
yes.
Or they've discovered newer ways. They've become, necessity is the mother of invention. So how do you do your work from home? You make it happen. You find ways to do it. You find ways to do things virtually. And lo and behold, it's like, hey, I can live anywhere.
Yes.
So let me get out of New York City.
And people with kids, they're uncertain as to the future of schooling in New York City.
That's right. They're learning.
They haven't found out whether their kids can go back to, public school, private school, nursery school, daycare, activity centers, summer camp. And so, they're looking for other living arrangements. So, I don't know, New York's getting a little shelled out. I'm in New York City as we speak, but I'm spending more time on the East End during the summer. I usually do. It's my usual routine. There's some changes. As to the pandemic... from where we are in New York, things really seem to be looking up because, in spite of the fact that there was, there certainly have been some violations of lockdown. I mean, between some, folks who are, gathering together, mostly like outdoor venues, drinking and eating, and there was actually a kind of a warning from the Governor Cuomo saying, we know who you are. People have been taking, videos of how you're violating the lockdown, and we're going to close you down. We're going to take away your liquor license. We're going to take away your, then there's the demonstrations too, where people, some of them wearing masks, some of them not wearing masks. They're gathering together in close proximity.
Nobody's social distancing during those protests. Nobody.
We're not seeing a big surge. Now, there are some areas that are hot spots, but I suspect it's because those are sort of virgin territory for the virus. Parts of Arizona, Texas, which hadn't been as heavily afflicted as New York. And, if there is a good news story for New York and the Northeast, it's that we've been hit pretty hard, And a fairly high percentage of our populace has experienced this. I'm not saying we're out of the woods, and I'm not saying that this precludes the possibility of this dreaded second wave, but there's some encouraging statistics from this part of the country. So,
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. In the meantime, people are coming up with ingenious workarounds. I posted this picture. It's a little hard to depict a photograph via a podcast, but on social media, I posted a picture, and it's a picture that it's of a sign in front of an office that says Austin OBGYN Associates curbside visits. So, and the caption on that.
I would be lining up for that.
And the question is, I mean, the caption on that is, I have questions, so many questions. How do they pull that off? it's sort of like urology telemedicine. You know, how do you do that?
Yes, I know what.
Right, exactly. We've been doing a lot of telemedicine, and some of our patients are savvy enough to utilize Skype, so we can actually see them as we talk to them. We did a couple of consults this morning.
Skype and Zoom, and it's all worked out quite well.
We talked about it last week, but I just want to reiterate how much this COVID-19 has had unanticipated consequences medically for people. So, for example, one of our patients that we talked to is diabetic, and we're doing the best we can. He is improving, but he needs to see an endocrinologist because I'm desirous of having him be put on some more medication that I'd like the endocrinologist to okay. And he just simply can't get a visit to an endocrinologist. So we're doing the best we can with, the medications I'm prescribing and, the very stringent diet and exercise. But for some diabetics, it's not enough. And he really needs an endocrinology workup from a diabetic specialist. And he can't get an appointment, and because they're just putting him off, and then we talked to another patient who has some symptoms that I tried to talk to her about her symptoms, and I was trying to be reassuring about her symptoms, but I think her anxiety could easily have been assuaged by a visit to a couple of doctors. She needed an eye checkup, and she needed a checkup from her neurologist. And, I was pretty sure that they were just going to say, look, we can't find anything, or this is going to be fine. But it would have been nice for her to get an objective assessment of what was going on. And she's afraid to go there because she says one doctor is a building with an elevator, and she doesn't want to get in an elevator. Everybody's scared to death of, being in close proximity to other people. And the other one's in a hospital. She doesn't want to go to a hospital because she feels it's possibly going to a hospital is one of the safest places to be because they really now, I mean, at the beginning, there was a lot of confusion, but now they really have segregated the patients who have COVID-19 from the normal patients. And it's going to be hard to get people to come back to see doctors. That's are afraid. True. They're afraid to go to places where there are sick people. I don't blame them.
It's a little bit of a PTSD that people are going to have to learn to get over,
We've done a good job about, scaring people into compliance with social distancing and wearing masks and staying home. And that message has been so thoroughly inculcated. It's going to take a long time to unravel that message, because eventually we got to get back to normal. And, sort of like...
Well, longer for some than for others. So I would think the majority and the nice weather and being out and missing each other and so forth are going to propel people forward to be less afraid. I want people to be less afraid. But still careful, but less afraid.
But there's so many people with a susceptibility already to anxiety and fears. And this is really coalesces their fears. I said in a conversation to her that I think you're becoming agoraphobic. And she says, I never had that before this, but I am afraid to go outside. And I said, we are becoming a nation of agoraphobics. Maybe there's 100 million agoraphobics in America now. They just don't want to go out. And, it's especially like if you're older, if you have a medical condition, there's some there's some real basis for being concerned, but it's some
it's
of it is magnified.
It's also very important to go out and get fresh air.
Hell yeah. And
it's
just
very unhealthy to be...
To see some greenery, to see to talk to some other people. You know, mm-hmm. I find that even when I'm talking to you, I feel like I'm just blabbing on because I feel I'm so constrained in my social interactions. I just, you know, I see my neighbor on the street and I'm like talking, you know, blah, 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 because it's like pent up conversation. You know?
We humans are social beings.
Yeah.
That is what we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we need to maintain that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. For good health overall.
Yeah, good health, you know, our cardiovascular health, our mental health, even our immune systems, you know, can, loneliness kills and isolation kills. Anyway, I think much of this has already been said, so let's get to questions, please.
Yeah, we've got, this is a great email we have from Lee. Lee says, have Dr. Hoffman explain this on a podcast, and what he sent was from the Glenn Center for Biology of Aging Research, Harvard Medical School.
Mm-hmm.
Why does COVID-19 disproportionately affect older people?
What a great question to pose.
Yeah.
And what a distinguished institution to undertake that study, you know, Harvard Medical School. I want to thank our frequent contributor, because he does, you know, send us nice articles.
He does.
For pointing us in the direction of this. And I posted it on social media. You can find this article on Facebook if you follow me on Facebook, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Why does COVID-19 disproportionately affect older people? And it's in a journal called Aging. You can find it at www.aging-us.com if you don't look for it on my website. Okay, so it's a very, very scholarly discussion of, you know, some of the changes that occur in the immune system and some of the ways in which the virus exploits these vulnerabilities as people age. Okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously the trend is towards, you know, the older you are, the more susceptible you are to the devastating problems associated with this. And one of the explanations is that it has to do with comorbidities. And yes, it's true. The older you get, yeah, the more likely you are to have hypertension, diabetes, the more likely you are to get fat because people tend to gain weight as they get older, et cetera.
Right.
Okay. But what they're saying here is that there's something else. They say that adults over 65 years of age represent 80% of hospitalizations, have a 23-fold greater risk of death.
Yeah.
Imagine that, 23-fold greater
23.
Risk than those under 65. So I'm on the wrong side of that equation. I'm 67. You're on the right side of that equation. But
for now, yeah.
results may vary. So now, of interest is that one of the authors is Dr. David Sinclair. And if that name sounds familiar, David Sinclair is the resveratrol guy.
He's
the guy.
Right.
Yeah, right. And he's done a lot of aging research.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so the sirtuin guy. And sirtuins, resveratrol supports sirtuins. Sirtuins have to do with protection, certainly against cardiovascular disease. And he was responsible for GlaxoSmithKline investing hundreds of millions of dollars in resveratrol research, which ended up not being that fortuitous. They kind of decided to write it off because they kind of reached a dead end. They couldn't really improve on the benefits of natural resveratrol from food or supplement sources. They wanted to synthesize some kind of super molecule to protect the brain, to protect the heart, you know, the ultimate anti-aging super pill. But, you know, it didn't pan out. But David Sinclair is still on the case. And in the article, he concludes, and I'm quoting, individuals who live healthy lifestyles and consume geroprotectors. Gero is from the word
geritol?
Geriatric. Yeah, like, right. Not necessarily geritol, because geritol, it was just like a patent medicine, iron tonic. You know, some people benefited, some people didn't. But gero it has to do with geriatrics. So they coined a word, geroprotectors. And what are these geroprotectors? Those who consume geroprotectors such as metformin, which is thought to be an anti-aging, not just a diabetes pill, but have anti-aging effects, resveratrol, and NAD plus boosters may have a decreased risk of fatality. Now, that kind of brings us to, actually one of our sponsors. And again, you know, disclaimer, you know, we're not talking about this as some sort of magic pill that you can pop and you'll be invulnerable to coronavirus, but it is a plausible strategy for supporting your immune system to have adequate amounts of NAD, because immunity is a high energy process, and to the extent your body can't generate energy, your body may generate a less robust immune response or a dysregulated immune response. And they actually, you know, when you get sick, your NAD decreases. And so I found this a fascinating article. And again, you know, keep in mind it's written by David Sinclair, so he sort of is he's got a dog in the fight to promote what has been his lifetime research interest, which is these anti-aging substances, you know, resveratrol, of course, to which he's added NAD and metformin. But and then also, you know, he also doesn't discount lifestyle. Right? You know, like excellent diet, you know, sleep, you know, all these things, you know.
Exercise. Yeah.
Exercise, of course. Yeah. But I thought it was, you know, very scholarly. You know, I forced myself to read it and my eyes practically glazed over with all the molecular pathways that he was talking about there.
Yes. The youthful system versus the age system.
Oh, yeah. You know, but if you want to get a PhD in, you know, molecular biology and immunology, read this article and memorize it. It kind of supports our, contention that preventive medicine is going to be one of the most important strategies for dealing with this pandemic. And, you know, notwithstanding the research on treatments and vaccines, for now, what else do we have other than optimizing our health and protecting ourselves?
Exactly.
This is a good point at which to pause, because we allow sponsors to share vital information with you. So what do you say? Let's hear it.
Absolutely. Yep.
Do you suffer with chronic pain? Are you taking risky over-the-counter or prescription anti-inflammatory drugs? Living with pain can cause depression, overeating, anxiety, loss of sleep, and low quality of life. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a better natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals. Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposome technology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. It contains powerful antioxidant properties and plant-based curcumin used to possibly reduce inflammation and block proteins that trigger swelling and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216. Or go to myfuturefarm.com. That's future, P-H-A-R-M. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Don't live with pain when there's an all-natural, science-based remedy that works without adverse side effects. Get free shipping on all of your orders at MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make intelligent medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions. What's next, Layla?
We have from Rick. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm a follower. I value your views. I was recently introduced to earthing, as my wife has tried it and says she's sleeping better. She's not as stiff in the morning after waking up. As I started reading her book, I noticed that one of the authors was Dr. Stephen Sinatra. And I know you've had him on your show many times.
Mm-hmm. And I just recorded a podcast with him. So by the time some of you are listening to this, that podcast is likely to have been posted. So look for that interview with him, because we do talk about earthing. Among other subjects, because the main subject was, since you're a cardiologist, I wanted to talk about some of the cardiologic manifestations of COVID-19, where, you know, even relatively young individuals are getting strokes and they're getting myocarditis and heart failure and, you know, all sort of nasty heart stuff. Right. So, but earthing was a subject.
Yeah. So Rick wants to know, Dr. Hoffman, what are your views on earthing?
Yeah. You know, so, you know, I talked to him about it, and, you know, what's interesting is that he is a very, very scrupulous clinician and researcher, and, you know, he's had a lot of experience working in conventional medicine, and it's not like he's a wackadoodle person or an unserious person. He's just a very open-minded and eclectic person. And he believes, you know, in medication where appropriate. He believes in supplements. He believes in lifestyle, you know, as, you know, one of the prime movers of immune support. And he also is very much into the psychological ramifications of disease. So he actually spent a lot of time getting certification in psychology during his training. But he also is a believer in earthing. Now, that sounds a little weird because basically, you know, what is he? You walk around barefoot on grass and on sand and, you know, that's supposed to be good for you? I mean, so I asked
him. Native electromagnetic.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I said, you know, what's the science? Because I know, you know, it feels good. I mean, I like to take my shoes off. I like to walk on, you know, on grass in the morning.
Between your toes.
Yes, it feels good on the toes and like a nice foot massage, you know, when you walk on the sand and the beach. You know, waves come up and lap your ankles. That sounds, that feels good. And, yeah, I guess that's good for you. But what he's saying is that it helps to us to establish an electrophysiological linkage to the Earth's magnetic field, which sounds weird, but there's a measurable magnetic field. And, you know, maybe some of the problems that we're experiencing is because we're divorced from that. You know, we wear shoes, we walk on concrete sidewalks, and we don't touch the Earth anymore. And he's actually done some research on this, and, you know, that's probably in the book. I guess there's a book with the title Earthing. And, you know, he's found that it actually has a bit of a anticoagulation effect. It thins the blood, which is good because thickened blood, you know, leads to, you know, blood clots and heart attacks and strokes. So he's quantified the benefits of this in some research. You know, I'm kind of joking with him because we were talking about the hydroxychloroquine research that got so quickly into the New England Journal of Medicine and Lancet.
Yeah.
And, you know, had to be promptly retracted because it was, you know, based on bogus data. And I said, well, hypothetically, what if you wrote a very scholarly article on earthing? How quickly do you think the review process of the New England Journal of Medicine and Lancet would allow you to publish your results? Would it be within a week or two of submission? Would it be within a month? Or would it be, would they bat it around with you for 2 years before, you know, with many, many rewrites and much checking, before they even considered it? Yeah. Actually,
number three.
The answer is D. They would, never publish it, you know,
they
but I'm just saying it, we have kind of this, you know, double standard in scientific literature is that if you pick a popular subject like hydroxychloroquine ain't no good, you know, you can rush that into publication. It's like in the major medical journals, they're shouting it from the mountaintops. They're, you know, immediately forbidding people to use hydroxychloroquine. Okay. And regardless of the miracles of hydroxychloroquine, I think it might be somewhat helpful. You know, it probably isn't a panacea, but, you know, I don't think it's without value. But when you talk about something like vitamins or supplements or even worse yet, earthing, oh, forget about it, you know.
Yeah.
Because you actually get the time of day from them.
Right.
Yeah.
Go walk barefoot, Rick.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to inspire me to reconnect with the ground.
Yes.
But, you know, if it doesn't help if you walk, you know, I'm in the 21st floor of an apartment. And
it's not going to happen there.
Yeah.
So, it's got to be out on the earth, right?
Right. So, Dr. Sinatra said, well, in lieu of walking barefoot, you can grab a faucet. He says, because in buildings that are built after 1960, they're grounded. So you can get grounded by just grabbing the faucet, you know.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
So, grab your faucet. Well, look at that. If you live in a structure post-1960.
Right.
Huh. Okay.
I'd rather walk barefoot on the beach, though. It's a little more appealing than grabbing a faucet in my bathroom. I don't know. It's not too picturesque.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. I could put some like seaside music or something, like a wave sound or something, and grab the
right.
faucet.
Yeah. And of course, we don't encourage anyone to go outside if you live in a city and walk on the concrete in your bare feet.
You don't
want to do that. You might get hurt, in fact. So don't do that.
And the other thing is just, you know, that you bring a lot of, not necessarily germs, certainly germs, but you also bring a lot of environmental pollutants inside. So take off your shoes, leave them at the, you know, in the alcove.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
I always take off my shoes. I mean, I'm very Japanese in that respect. And my whole family follows that.
Yeah. I was actually brought up that way. We didn't even enter other people's homes with our shoes on. We always took them off, even though they said, oh, no, you don't have to do that.
Yeah
we did, because it was just a habit.
Yeah. I think it's
very good practice.
Yeah. I think it's actually a sort of a nice etiquette if you're coming to someone's home and you don't know them.
Yes.
Is, you know, when you knock on the door and they say, oh, hi, how you doing? Is that you say, would you like us to take off our shoes? I mean, some people don't care. Mm-hmm. And that's their prerogative, because, you know, they may feel kind of weird that you're taking off your shoes and nobody else is taking off their shoes.
I'll tell you, many cultures, my own included, you know, people are offered slippers when they take off their shoes.
Okay.
You know, I would go visit an aunt or two, and they would have rows and rows of slippers to choose from. So once you take off your shoes, they would offer you a nice clean pair of lovely slippers.
That sounds like a nice, you know, alternative, especially in the winter when it's cold, you know, maybe your feet get cold. It's a cultural habit, but it, I think, has got some hygienic and health properties.
Right.
So anyway, that we ranged far afield from a question about earthing. that's what we do here. And so what's coming up in part two?
In part two, can you help with my 69-year-old sister who has rheumatoid arthritis?
Very interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. We'll take that up in just a moment when we return. Part two coming up of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.